tracks.
We'll get it out of the way then.
Yeah, and I've gotten more compliments on that track than any of the others.
Are you really?
It's like, there must be something weird here.
That is so funny. I don't know if there's data that's been gathered in the world or anything like that, you know, but like, cause like maybe things like that only stand out because they're surprising. And so they loom larger than they really are in one's mind. But I feel like that actually happens maybe kind of often when you hear artists talking about their music or their books or their paintings or whatever. It's like, oh, I wasn't even going to include that track. Like, my producer told me to, and then it's like their number one biggest hit. You know what I mean? It's funny that happens.
Absolutely.
I think I remember noticing that with, what's the guy's name? Pierre, I think Boulay or something French, who wrote Bridge Over the River Kwai, and he wrote Planet of the Apes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he hated Planet of the Apes. Like, I remember reading a little thing from him where he's like, I think he gave it the movie rights away for like $100 or something like that. Like, geez. He was like, this stupid book, why would you ever want to make a movie out of this?
Yeah. How many artists aren't famous until they've died in the long
right,
past?
Yeah. Yeah. Well then Mr. Ray's Hose, like maybe since we've heard a little bit about it, can you tell me anything about that? I do feel like some of these tracks are like, it's probably pretty straightforward. It probably says right on the label where the inspiration came from, but I don't know. What, other than it being your least favorite track?
Yeah. So I had so these are all my own compositions, and I had a lot of fun with the titles because obviously with music that's going to leave an impression almost instantly before the music's even heard. So I put a lot of thought into the titles, and most of them, well, pretty much all of them were based upon situations that I encountered. And I think all of these, except one or two, were written during COVID. I think the Wahoo Tree, I started writing that a few years before COVID and never really figured out which direction it was going. But so this Mr. Ray's Hose, it's kind of a double entendre. Well, it's not at all. It's more of a misdirect. I have a friend named Dave, and do some reenacting with him. And my girlfriend and I were staying at his house one evening. We had attended a Burns night. I think two Burns nights, actually, which is odd because
because it usually only happens once a year.
Yeah, and well, it's odd that to go to one and not be participating in it. So, we went out to see Sean Healy and Kevin Elam, and I think there were a few others. Anyway, we went and hung out with them, and they're phenomenal musicians, and they're a lot of fun to hang out with. So, afterwards, we went to a few bars in the area, and Sean's a big fan of drinking Guinness and Chambord. He was that evening, at least. And my girlfriend Lorna had not tried that combination before, and of course she got hooked on it because it's delicious. I'm kind of I go back and forth on it because it's, you know, you can't disrupt the purity and deliciousness of Guinness, but if you're going to, it's a fun way to do it, and it gives it a nice little tinge. But so anyway, fast forward later in the evening, and there was a garden hose in Mr. Ray's front yard that was tripped over a few times, and just kind of as a poke in the side, it seemed appropriate to write a tune about it.
Was it tripped over a few times by the same person, or did everybody just take turns tripping over it?
By the same person.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. So you don't really get that impact from the tune itself. It's kind of a silly occurrence, and it's kind of a more of a minor key sounding tune. But I suppose maybe the repetition at the beginning might be a nod to the the tripping there. So
yeah,
take
I
that
see.
For a euro.
Well, I mean, speaking of, you know, like art being interpreted by the people enjoying it after it's left the artist, you know, like I never would have guessed that this was based on such a silly occurrence. In Indifference though, Sean, the track right before it, Stuck at the Window, I maybe do kind of a funny thing. I try my best whenever I'm first experiencing an album to just listen to it and only after read the titles, precisely because, like you say, the titles have a big impact, you know? Mm-hmm. But Stuck at the Window was one that, like, as soon as I looked down to see the track title, I was like, yeah, that fits perfectly. Like, that is, it feels very evocative of exactly that.
Yeah. Maybe 3 or 4 months into COVID, just the repetition of waking up and doing the exact same thing and not going out, and just the boredom and borderline depression, boredom. I wanted it to be reflective upon that. I didn't want it to be too sad because it is a slower tune, and I think there's something fun about slower tunes that kind of wander nowhere, and I thought a lot about Illen Pipes for this one, and there's something really characteristic about Illen Pipes playing slow airs. I think as Scottish pipers, we get into a rhythm of the A part, the B part, and
totally
call and response, you know, fixed number of measures, and it's very predictable. Even if the melody kind of wanders away from what you might expect, but if you listen to some airs on Illen Pipes, they have a tendency of going way over in left field, and you get lost in it, and there's something magical about that. So I wanted to try and do something along that line, and I don't know if maybe I was able to deliver upon it, or if it just kind of sounds like nonsense where it's like, what's holding this tune together? But I think that's where the keyboard really comes in and helps to not only give it that groove,
kind of ground it around.
Yeah.
Well, I sure enjoyed it. I think it's excellent. Speaking of sort of like noticing those differences between, you know, style of play and you know, the pipes that are idiomatic to different sort of regional styles and such, I looked you up on thesession.org.
Really?
What I read there was that you were originally a Highland piper. Scottish small pipes, however, won your heart, and they remain your go-to, or at least they did when this was written. That whistles were where you obviously gravitated toward, but flute had been taking up a lot of your time when you wrote this. And that you were also learning the melodeon at the time and loving every minute of it.
I completely forgot that I had made that profile. I think it was kind of like a... did I have a date by any chance? Because I suppose I was looking for... I moved to New Jersey a few years back from West Virginia, and... maybe that was my first attempt at trying to find other musicians in the area.
That would make sense. I did not notice a date, but I did notice like there was a map associated with them. And maybe that's just standard for all membership profiles. I'm not sure, but I think it does have to do with their like finding a session kind of feature on there.
Well, that's really fun. I'm gonna have to go and update that because the Melodeon's still learning that, but. Mm-hmm. Having a lot of fun with it, but I've picked up a few more odds and ends along the way.
Yeah. Well, could you give me a little bit of that, maybe a flavor of how that trajectory has gone so far? Like, was it competition Highland piping specifically at the beginning, or was it something else? And then at what point, well, actually, let's back up more than that, Sean. When did bagpipes first come onto your radar? Do you remember the first time you saw or heard any kind of bagpipe?
I don't think specifically the first time that I saw or heard them, but I do kind of have an interesting origin story. So I started playing the pipes. I started taking lessons at least in like 2006, 2008, somewhere in that time frame. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, my dad had purchased me a what I now know is a cheap Pakistani-made practice chanter, but it came in this little box, and I haven't seen one since. I haven't looked either, but it was a really nice how to get started with it, and it had a little pamphlet and some extra reeds, and I've probably still got it somewhere, but that was when I was a lot younger, and the attention span was worse than what it is now, so you know, I probably had a few goes at it and got bored of it, but that was maybe 5 or 6 years prior to joining the City of Winchester Pipes and Drums, who they're still alive and kicking. They're a lot of the original members too. They're great group of people. If I rewind a bit more on this weird timeline that I'm trying to navigate, when I was younger, I grew up in West Virginia, and both of my parents' families are from the Towson, Baltimore area. And we would go and visit my grandparents during the summer. And at my maternal grandmother's house, she had a neighbor who had either a nephew or a grandson. I'm not sure I should know this, but a nephew or a grandson who played the pipes. And he was, he is maybe 10 years older than me. And so I was 13 or so, and he was in his early 20s or somewhere about that. And
that's the right age difference for them to be very cool. Whatever that person was doing was going to be cool, right?
Yeah, and I don't think I ever actually saw him, but I remember probably 3 or 4 years in a row going up to visit Grandmom and hearing the pipes periodically.
And was this like over the fence, like the very next neighbor over kind of thing?
Like three houses down. So
great.
I never saw
distance.
It, but yeah, absolutely. And on the Highland Pipes, if I didn't disclose that, but
yeah,
I didn't really think much about it, but other than, oh, that's neat. But back to the weird timeline, fast forward, I joined the City of Winchester, and they would have, they might still do it actually, once a month or once every other month, they would have two instructors come out from a higher grade band. And at the time, the Winchester band was a grade five, or maybe not even competing, maybe just doing parades and community events. But they would have these pros come in, and one gentleman on pipes and practice chanter, and the other for the drums. And come to find out, it was so Dan Lydon he took over for the City of Washington pipes and drums around that time period when I was hearing him. And I think they were a grade one band at the time, based out of DC. And he was the one that would come out to Winchester to teach the band and give little snippets of information that we all looked forward to. But I couldn't have had a better example to listen to growing up, because, you know, it could have been just Joe Schmo blowing away on his pipes down the road, and that could have turned me off from piping forever.
Yeah,
so I'm forever grateful that it was someone of his caliber, which is really neat. So I've gotten to know Dan throughout the years, and my uncle still asks about him every time I see him. And
oh, really?
It's pretty neat how small the universe is. But
yeah.
I guess from there, I played with that band throughout high school, and then I went to college, and I think my freshman or sophomore year of college, I got a set of Nate Banton small pipes. But
oh, really?
Yeah.
You got some good stuff right out the gate there then.
Oh yeah. And I didn't really know what I was doing at the time, so I was just playing like Green Hills and stuff on the small pipes. And
oh yeah, I think for so many of us, at least when we first get them, we just treat them like tiny Highland bagpipes.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't know if maybe there wasn't a lot of information at the time, or if I just, not that I didn't care, but there are so many other distractions being in school, so I didn't give them much from the start. But
I don't know if it's relatable, but I so often think to myself, like, is this new or was I just ignorant for a long time? You know, like,
oh, yeah.
Maybe everybody else already knew about this stuff, but I sure didn't at that time, you know? So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But Sean, when your dad gave you that chanter, that practice chanter, was that in response to you requesting it? Like, were you interested or was he interested in having you play?
I think it was more from my interests here and there. And
gotcha.
I think around that time, my brother had gotten me into like Dropkick Murphy's and Flogging Molly and whatnot. So there's definitely some interests. But the chanter kind of helped bring it to life. And
gotcha.
Moving from there, didn't really play either of the pipes too much throughout college. I here and there I'd pick them up, but just didn't really have a much of a focus, I suppose, or a direction really. And
just out of curiosity, what were you going to college studying?
Mechanical engineering.
Very cool.
Yeah, so that was a fun time. But I guess fast forwarding through that, I had known some friends of mine from pipe band stuff, reconnected after college and eventually joined the McMillan pipe band, and that's when the piping started to accelerate a bit. Was playing with the grade 3 band and got into doing some solos, and but really the small piping took over. And I was fortunate enough to live really close to some excellent small pipers. So here we are, and that just continued to the Indiana Jones boulder of music continues to chase me. And
what I'm trying to get at is just when you got into the small piping, was this in response to any recording artists you were listening to at the time, or was it mostly the influence of the local excellent small pipers that you were near to, or was this more just you personally, like, I like the sound of that instrument, I want to do it more?
No, a lot of friends. I remember going to bagpipe camp before college, and a few friends from that had small pipes, and that was really where the idea of, like, oh, what is this? This is something that's not as down the straight and narrow of competition piping, and they're a little more resilient to casual playing. But they've really taken over, and I realized after recording this album that I think I've got more whistle on the album than I do piping, and it's kind of a misdirect with the artwork, because I've got me playing a crazy bagpipe on there. So
don't regret a bit anything that went into that artwork, Sean. I don't want to say that it's my very favorite part of the album, because obviously I like the music, but my goodness, I really like that artwork. I will admit to you, it wasn't until I saw some of the photos of the process of building that cover that I was sure it wasn't AI. And I don't mean that in a way that's like any kind of a... Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. It's the fingers. And which now, knowing it, and especially looking back at the... You made a social media post a while ago where you shared some of the drafts of the cover. Mm-hmm. And the fingers get even crazier in some of those.
Fingers are hard.
I respect it. I think that's awesome. there was one where there was even like so many fingers on one hand and the other, and they interlock even, you know?
Yeah. And I think I spent a little bit of time drawing that up, and then after kind of taking a step back when it was done, realizing, wait a minute, that's not how you play pipes. What am I thinking?
Only then.
Yeah.
I imagine you like picking up a chanter and checking, like, wait a second, is this right?
Oh, yeah.
This can't be right.
Yeah. So that was it was one of these things where I was originally planning to outsource the artwork side of things, and I just had a bunch of ideas that I was letting stew, and with the plans of taking it to like a tattoo studio and just having somebody. Anyway, I went all over the place. I went to even contacted a bunch of schools and just saying, you know, I'm doing this project. If anybody be interested, I'd be happy to pay them, yada, yada, yada. But I don't know if I just didn't look hard enough or if it was kind of intentional that I did it to myself because I knew I wanted to try and figure it out. So I went through the process of trying different mediums and even crayons, because I've heard some artists do incredible things with crayons, just with the blending side of things. But I got to a point where I was about to just give up on it, and I realized, like, oh yeah, woodworking. I've done some fun things with woodworking. Let's make an intarsia.
It's so cool.
Yeah,
it's so unique. I mean, like, this is one of those things where I'm like, am I just ignorant, or is this completely unique in the world of bagpiping? Because I can't think of another example of it anywhere. I just think it's really cool.
Yeah, it's hanging in our parlor now, which is it's kind of fun because we almost had the idea of that before the wallpaper in the background. We live in a house that was built in 1798, so the parlor's got a really, not the original wallpaper, but it's got an older wallpaper that's got some character to it. So there's some extra of that I utilized for the background of this.
Oh, really? And so it's the same wallpaper?
Yeah. So
that's very cool.
After throwing that on there, we realized, oh, this has to go in the parlor, so it kind of blends in even more. But
oh, I saw a picture of you holding a box of CDs right in front of it.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize. That's so cool.
Yeah. So that was almost more incentive to get it done properly and make sure the brass was polished up nicely, which kind of turned on me in a way, because I polished the brass a little bit too much to where it became nearly impossible to get a photo of it. So, what are you going to do? So a friend of mine was able to get the photo for us, and she admitted that she had trouble with the brass. So I think down the line, I might try and get it redone just to have a better representation of the sign. But
well, good to know, because that was question number one when I put feelers out to some of the show supporters, just asking, like, hey, I'm going to be interviewing Sean Reedy, because I know that most, if not everybody who's supporting the show at present already owns a copy of your album, you know, and definitely listens.
Good
and
deal.
So I was like, hey, you know, you all know the music. Do you want me to ask anything? And the very first question that popped up was from Benjamin Elzerman asking, what are you going to do with that cover art? So now we know where it is. I'm gathering it'll have a nice happy home there.
As long as it doesn't fall off the wall, it's pretty heavy.
I bet it's heavy, yeah. I've always really liked, like, claymation and stuff like that, you know, and I don't know, that three-dimensionality of it is just, it's very cool. And as much as I love the way it ended up, there is one sketch in, like, your collection of drafts where there's some kind of devil about to smash your head with a hammer.
Some kind of minotaur, I think. And I took some inspiration from Monty Python artwork. You know how they would do some of the in-between cuts between the scenes, they would have these crudely drawn characters. And I think there was a hammer that I was trying to reflect on that, but I decided that was a little bit too out there. So
this is really fun stuff, man. And so, like, the like sources for inspiration that you're pulling from just seem like it's anything and everything. Maybe that's a good spot for us to pull in another track, actually. Like, speaking of fun titles, I don't know. Like, I don't think we could possibly... We'd be doing it wrong if we went through this episode without asking you about Burrito on the Floor. I like to imagine that this tune was, like, composed worked out, recorded, like the whole process all happened while you looked sadly at a delicious burrito that fell on the floor. Maybe don't disabuse me of that idea, actually.
Yeah, we can go with that. I meant to ask my girlfriend, Lorna, about this the other day because I was kind of thinking about what we'd be talking about, and I realized that I don't remember the story exactly as it's truly happened. But we were at a friend's house, or I think, regardless, we walked to a pub down the road, and I had an Italian wrap that I had made a half an hour prior, and I guess I didn't eat it yet, and I brought it with me for the walk, but I didn't eat the whole thing on the walk, so we get to the pub, and I put it in my coat pocket, and I think I forgot it was in there or something, and then I took it out midway through, because I was excited that it was still in there, but she didn't want me to eat this wrap in the middle of the pub.
Sure.
So I was taking sneaky bites of it. So I had it resting on my knee while we were sitting at the bar. And similar to how I forgot it was in my jacket, I forgot that it was on my knee. So the wrap fell on the floor.
Yeah.
So it was just such a stupid but silly occurrence. Later, either that night or the next day, I don't remember how this tune came along, but I knew for a fact that it couldn't be called rap on the floor because that just sounded dumb. So burrito on the floor really makes it. Yeah,
gotcha.
And then we got the we got lots of different. One of the things that was pretty eye opening about this whole project was having a blank slate and. You know, writing a tune's hard enough as is to figure out what direction it's going to go. But then when you bring in different instrumentation, it really complicates things because, sure, if you've got someone who you play with regularly, you can kind of get a feel for what direction they're going to be going. But Garmin, the guy who recorded this for me, he really left the ball in my court and gave me a bunch of options to choose from as far as... he did all of the string accompaniment on this album along with the keys and so one of the things he would do when we were I would go to him with all these raw tunes that I wanted to do something with and he would say, you know, what's the feel of it, and you know, easy questions right out the gate, but they turned out to be really difficult. So
yeah.
He would give me a bunch of different guitar licks or strumming patterns to choose from, and for whatever reason he went with this kind of twangy Western sounding guitar piece for this one, and immediately I knew, like, oh, this is just silly enough to work, and I think it's become, if not the one of my favorites from the album, just because it is unique in that sense, and it's silly enough with the parts, the B part, it's so dumb and repetitive, but I think there's something special about that because it really kind of locks in the groove in a way. Along with that,
it is really groovy. Yeah,
yeah, and I've got a friend who plays the bones quite well. He's got some championship achievements under his belt, but he threw the bones on that one, and that really kind of locked in the Western feel of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like this one a lot. And not to like pick your work apart or anything like that, Sean, I also feel self-conscious about being like, well, I like that one. I like that one. Like as if my opinion matters. It's good already. You don't need me to qualify, you know, what's good or anything like that. But I admire the heck out of that really tasteful ding that happens right about halfway through.
Oh, isn't that great?
It's
that was
so good.
Yeah. So Garmin had a good habit of, he's a musician through and through, and he's always trying wacky stuff just to see what sticks. And I think we were listening to a playback at one point, and he dinged on his cup and just kind
of... Is that what that was?
He did it, and he kind of smiled at me and was like, oh, no, we actually need to do this. So his dad plays, he does a lot of Civil War reenacting, and his dad makes Civil War drums. I think he does it professionally, and he's done it for the last X amount of years. But so he ran up to the house and dug through his dad's collection of things, and he came back with different symbols and triangles, and he actually said that his dad's got a triangle that he keeps like in his personal room because I guess Garmin's gone for it before, and yeah, so that one was off limits, but yeah, it was just a triangle, but yeah, something as simple as that.
This crusty dad from the other room, like, you better not be getting in my triangles again.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's so excellent. And also, like, again, I'm not trying to pick the work apart. It's just like the fact that if I'm not mistaken, it only happens the one time.
Yep.
And it's like that makes it all the more special. This like sparing use of this new sound, this texture that comes into it all of a sudden. I don't know. It's maybe kind of that leaves you wanting more kind of thing. I don't know. Whatever it is, though, I thought that was real special.
Yeah, I don't know. I've thought a bit about it as well. And I think that maybe I probably wanted to do it to a couple other tracks, but realized like, no, that's gonna kill the effect. But there were a lot of really fun moments like that throughout the project, and the Kingdom of Norwenia, that actually has we did some fun stuff with that where I brought in a bunch of chains from my shop and.
I wanted to ask you about the percussion on this. Is that what's going on there?
Yeah. So I wanted to get a real nautical kind of representation on this one. Because this one's tied into some Viking reenactment, and there's a long inside joke behind this one. But I thought that Pirates of the Caribbean, Caribbean. I always get that wrong. But
I don't think you get it wrong. There's just two options. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, there you go. Appalachia.
That's right. Yeah, it's that kind of thing.
So we just we got on the stairs. I think if I'm remembering correctly, Garmin hit the record button and ran up to the higher part of the stairs as well, and we were both. If you would have walked in or caught a glimpse of us walking by the house, you would have thought we were insane because we were just stomping in time on the stairs and dropping chains from different heights to really get a pretty...
That is so cool, though. Like on their own to then be manipulated into a position on the timeline of the track, or was it like you had headphones on listening to the track and you were recording live direct to it?
Direct to it.
Thank you.
we did kind of blur the line there because we did it live, but then after we listened to it, we realized that it was a bit too much like a metronome. So we went back and recorded some where we were intentionally out of time and a little bit early in spots to give it more of a realistic touch of what you might imagine would be occurring on a ship. Not that they'd be dropping chains on ships, but you know what I mean?
Maybe by accident, right?
Yeah, sure. So
what are they doing with those chains anyway?
Yeah.
You know, have you listened to that Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it might even be the opening track on there, the Poor Lazarus song where they've got the chain gang. Like, I think they're using pickaxes or shovels or something. That is kind of the percussive sound. I have a really clear memory of, as a child, listening to that soundtrack because my dad loved that movie and loved that soundtrack. How, like, there are tools falling out of time and just noticing that, like, you know, like as a younger kid learning music, being like, well, you're supposed to be perfectly on time. And then noticing that wasn't perfectly on time and I liked it, you know, that like that could be not only okay, but even a good choice to make.
Right. There's the uncanny valley side of it where you're not really going to enjoy the perfection of it. Getting otherwise.
No, the Kingdom of Norwenia. I'm not qualified to ask you this question, but isn't there something about is it the Kentum Centum divide where, you know, K's make a K sound, or rather C's make a K sound in one place, but they make a S sound in another place? And is it like Nordic, or I mean, is that what's going on here? Is that why you wrote Kingdom the way you did, or am I just barking up the wrong tree and I don't even know what I'm talking about?
Well, I don't. This is one of those late night after all day being in the sun at fair, talking to people and playing the pipes and being dehydrated and sitting around the fire and with a group of people in a similar circumstance where the words start to get a little weird. And I don't recall exactly why we went with C's, and I'm sure Steven's my buddy Steven's probably yelling right now if he's listening to this, but
he does know why.
Yeah, there's I'll kind of keep it brief, but this is this imaginary kingdom that some friends and I made up around a campfire. Kind of not making fun of another friend, but based on what a friend said, asking if people from Norway are called Norwenians. So we've created this fictional kingdom, and it needed a soundtrack. That brings in the other thing I meant to mention with this one that was interesting about the recording process was I'm playing the it's not a bombard, it's kind of a shawm, it's a Julian Goodacre piece. He calls them border horns, and I'm sure he's got a very Julian reason for naming it that, but one thing that I wasn't aware of until we got to the recording part of it was that After doing so, Garmin was asking me, you know, do you like this better or this better? And we were playing with the microphone position, and he liked when the mic was further away, and I didn't. And it took us a minute to realize the obvious reason was that I'm accustomed to hearing it right next to my ears, whereas everyone else is hearing it from a distance. So we went with the further away mic to give it a more realistic representation, but it was really hard for me to get used to that because it just didn't sound right. But there are so many things like that along the ride that with the recording process that were really fun to learn, and I'm hoping to do another album in the future. I haven't even started writing stuff for it yet, but I really just enjoyed the process so much. It was so much fun to do.
Well, and it's been a lot of fun to consume, so I'm really glad you did it. And, you know, not trying to push your force art to happen or anything, but yeah, as a consumer, I'd sure love it if you did another project for sure.
I got the set of Flemish pipes about midway through the project, and I really wanted to try and get them on the album, but I decided it was best to wait and learn them so I can get a good representation of them. So I think that's going to be, if and when I do number two, it'll be a lot more of that, just because they've got their fully chromatic octave and a half, lot of different options moving in that direction. So,
gotcha. Well, yeah. Speaking of like sort of different sounds and voices on the album, and feel free to tell me if I'm wrong about this, but it seemed to me like the last track of the album, and maybe this is intentional, maybe I'm completely off track though, the Cow House in Alloway, it felt like this is like a great party between all, or even maybe just most of the voices from the album kind of all coming together. I felt like I was hearing small pipes, melodeon, whistles, guitar, maybe border pipes, maybe it was the Good Acre horn thing, maybe Highland pipes. What all did I hear in this track? Do you remember?
So, most of that, yes. The pipes you're hearing were actually Highland pipes with an A chanter.
Gotcha. That makes them kind of bordery, doesn't it?
I had a set of border pipes, but I sold them. They were they just weren't getting played enough, and border pipes require a lot of attention. So they kind of were seeing the inside of my case more than the sunlight. So I wanted this one to
Sean, I feel like we've got to come up with some kind of joke there. There's a joke hiding there where you say that border pipes require a lot of attention. We've got to be able to say something like, you can't let your border pipes fall in the edges, or get pushed to the periphery, or something. There's got to be a joke there somewhere. I think it was Rod Nevin who mentioned that you have a great sense of humor and you wanted us to pull out some puns, so I'm trying to deliver.
Well, anyone that's attended the Piper's Gathering and heard Rod's talk and banter during the cabaret knows how much of a wordsmith he is with the puns.
Gotcha, yeah.
Rod's a lot of fun. This one, I don't know where it kind of started with, but I was playing around with C natural a lot with my drones tuned to G, and I don't know if the drones even come through too well on the track. I haven't listened to that one in a while, but I wanted it to just kind of be a big, happy, bustling, party sounding kind of track. We've had a few
definitely
sessions
sounds like
here.
A party. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got a cozy little parlor that we've had a few sessions in since moving out here. And, it's just, I want to be able to kind of capture that energy, in a track. So it had a bit of, too much going on. There was, EJ Jones has a track that, I'm not sure which album it's on or what it's even called, but I remember it because Francis, his bouzouki player, was talking about how they've got trombone on the track, and apparently I think she was like a concert trombonist before.
Wow, really?
Joining him, yeah. So they've got it's one of those big party kind of tracks, and the trombone comes in at the end, and it shouldn't work, but it does. And I mean, let those two loose on anything, it'll work. But
I gotta go hunting because I don't think I've heard that. But that sounds like would be so fun.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I'm blanking on what I was going to say about EJ, but other than
no worries, it'll probably come back.
He's the coolest. Yeah,
that's what it was. You were just going to say EJ's cool.
Yeah, and, he's like, so cool.
We all tend to agree. Yeah,
absolutely.
I've had this feeling, and I really like your music, Sean. So I've got that feeling myself even now. That I don't know if you ever saw the old SNL skit where Chris Farley is interviewing Paul McCartney, and basically he's like on a daytime television interview show, and all of his questions are like, "So remember when you were with the Beatles?
Oh yeah,
that was awesome."
I think I've seen that one. Yeah,
that's how I always, you know, like when we sat down here, you know, my worries, I'm just gonna be like, "Well, your album's really cool," and have that be the whole thing. But speaking of being a fanboy, if you know, like, again, I'm not qualifying your work, Sean, but if I had to, I don't have to, but if I had to pick a favorite track. For me personally, at least right now, I think it would probably be the Pork Soup Reel.
Making pork soup one day, and I think I included on the album notes that I've never made pork soup, but I did not follow a recipe, and I have not since made pork soup. But
that was it.
I was standing in front of the stove all day, and well, for a period of time at least, and a little bit of a snippet of this came into my head, and it kind of freaked me out because. A lot of times you'll hear something and just think that, oh, what, that's something. And the only thing I could think of was that it was like a video game soundtrack. And I've never really, I played video games when I was a kid, but I was never really a big gamer or anything. And I did a little bit of hunting to see if maybe there was something, but couldn't find anything. So just kept going with it and writing, and it kind of presented itself as a game of syncopation. It was tricky with this one because like I mentioned before, I approached Garmin when we started recording this, and I played through it a few times, and he started writing some guitar parts for it, and he really nailed it with the groove that really just got that groove that it needed. But it was almost immediately apparent that it needed some harmony in it. But how the heck do you harmonize on a reel that just doesn't stop? So I wanted it to highlight the syncopation because there are some parts where the syncopation's pretty obvious, and then there's some parts where it's you got to listen for it a bit more. I wanted the whistle to do that, but not just be a pretty underdeveloped playing along note by note. So I asked a few people after we had gotten this one, the wheels turning on this, if they thought it was a bit too busy. And pretty much everybody said yes. There's a lot going on here. This is too much. I don't know what's happening. But I don't know why. I really thought that the whistle needed to stay. That's where we are, like it or not.
I, for one, like it. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. And again, with Garmin's genius mind, he had me do some weird things with the whistle as far as the configuration of when I was playing certain things, because I was approaching the harmonies like a piper would do, and just, you know, keeping it simple and direct. And he's got a very strong pop music foundation, and a lot of this followed a pop music algorithm. And he says, you know, it works for a reason. And anyway, so like I think the C part, or the third part of this track, the whistle harmony cuts out completely. And when we were doing this at first, I thought, like, what do you mean? It's just going to stop and then come back in the fourth part. And it just seemed odd, like it just falls off a cliff. But I think the way that he keeps the guitar going, it works out in a strange way. And that's just another one of those things that kind of not makes it my own because it was his idea, but it gives it that unique feel that you're not going to get with a lot of traditional piping albums, just because it's got some weird stuff like that happening.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense why that would feel weird to any piper. Like, I think we all end up having this tendency toward, once it starts, it can't stop. Like, even unexamined, I think that just becomes kind of baked in for a lot of us, maybe even more so if pipes is where we started or if we've spent a lot of time focusing on pipes.
Yeah, and there's almost a bit of a polyphony that comes through with the whistle part. It's not only serving to harmonize in certain spots, but I think that's probably why some people think it might be a little too busy, but I've really grown fond of it. It's just too slow now that I've listened to it again after having finished it. So that was another strange part about the whole process, was that when I first came in to approach Garmin to start this project, all the tunes were fresh and I had been practicing them because I was ready to record. But then the project went on for, I don't know, 3 years or so, and we're meeting sometimes two or three times a month. And after listening to little tweaks here and there over and over and over and over again for 2.5, 3 years, however long it was, I honestly just got sick of the tunes. So come time for final recording, I hadn't practiced them in forever, and I think I was a lot stronger when I first started the project than when final recording came around. So that was an interesting point for learning the next time around. And anybody that's getting the idea of doing some recording is you're going to get burned out real quick. So tread lightly there.
That is really interesting. That's super interesting. I've heard my friend, and I think you know him too, John Charles, has mentioned before that, like, there are some albums that he kind of tries to not over listen to the album so that they kind of, you know, stay special.
Absolutely.
Which I think I can understand that. I've never had the forethought to actually do that myself, but I have had the, you know, sort of that letdown sadness experience where it's like, I realize that this album that's been carrying me for months, like, I've listened to it too much, haven't I? It's time for me to, you know, like, it's not doing it for me anymore.
Yeah, flying too close to the sun almost.
That's right, yeah. And, you know, you hope that maybe years later you'll have kind of like a second, you know, fall in love with it a second time kind of thing. But I've never done a project like this, so I never would have thought that, like, but I mean, it makes sense that, like, as the artist as well, you could get tired of what you're working on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and just the, not the self-doubt so much, but the, that side of performing where you want to listen to somebody else. You don't really want to listen to yourself, and being forced to do so on a project, it really amplifies that issue of, like, well, I don't want to spend my free time working on this any more than I have to. But with that all being said, I'm really selling it now, aren't I? Go out and buy a copy.
Right. Nah. Sure. Well, speaking of selling it, I'm going to give away a copy of the album to a show supporter real quick. So I'm going to do a little dice roll with the Cthulhu Dice Tower and see who gets a copy of the album.
This has been fun. Yeah.
I do think that, like, with this one specifically, Sean, we probably should note that because so many show supporters already have a copy of this album, I'm going to already go out and just say that whomever wins this dice roll, I'm going to give them the option to gift it to another person if they already have a copy of the album.
Oh, that's great.
I'll do that. So here Absolutely. We go. Let's see who gets a copy of the album today. We got a 19. I don't have that many people on the list. I'm going to roll again. Now we're talking 8. Let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Carol B. Thank you so much, Carol B, for supporting the show. I'm going to reach out to you after I finish this recording, and we'll get you a copy of the album.
Oh, great.
Is this the same David that tripped over the hose?
Oh, no. I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did a few times. He was quite a character. But this was for a friend that I met in the Macmillan band who passed away.
I see.
Wanted to have something written for him just because he was such a character. And I don't know what else to say on that other than... It's hard to lose somebody, but if there are ways you can kind of remind yourself of them from time to time, it's a nice way to go about it. So I wanted to do this one on flute and then have whistles on the harmony, but I couldn't get the, as it goes, get behind the mic and the flute just wasn't working. So I've got a bit of
those flutes kind of choose when they're going to work, don't they?
I'll tell you. Yeah. but I've kind of got a wandering melody or harmony rather behind the melody. And my friend Nick on the dulcimer really ties that all together. He can sprinkle some magic onto pretty much anything. It seems fitting for that one. Final thoughts, but I don't know how long we're gonna go, but
it's good. Yeah, it feels like a natural spot to move kind of in that direction for sure. Yeah.
The Wahoo Tree was
guess what? I was about to ask you if we could close with the Wahoo Tree.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
so there you go.
I think this is definitely my favorite of the album. And I think a lot of it goes to the simplicity of the tune. There's a lot of personal meaning to the tune. I grew up in a really interesting area in West Virginia. Mm. My dad bought at the time it was a vacation cabin that my paternal grandfather had, and my dad got out of the army and bought it from him. My parents moved up there, and it's located on just at the edge of national forest. So we grew up with like 26,000 acres of forest right in our backyard.
Wow.
And just a really magical place. And I think when I wrote this one, I was really feeling the homesick feelings that I hadn't really experienced before. And I don't know if I was really thinking about it a lot, but there was a tree growing up near one of our neighbors that it was this really large, tall, old dead tree that it was still standing, but it had a whole, I guess it was like a large branch had fallen off, but I guess raccoons or something would nest in the hole. So anyway, we had a neighbor who he's a bit of a hermit and kind of a scary old guy, but every
what
so often.
What a good place to be a hermit, though.
Oh, yeah.
If I was going to be a hermit, that's where I would go.
Yeah. And so every so often we'd see him. He would come out of his shack. And my brother and I, when we were kids, we'd ride our bikes all over the place. And
I hope he would dispense wisdom when he came out of his shack, like in the hermit tradition, right?
For those who have ears to hear, right?
Then you'd understand.
Yeah, exactly. So he would always scare my brother and I when we'd get close enough to talk to him and point over at the tree and say, "That's the Wahoo tree." And he spun this fun tale that there was some kind of mythical monster that lived in the tree, and not to stay out too late or the Wahoo will get you. And,
no way.
Yeah, so it just
sounds like such a good childhood, Sean. That sounds awesome. He's this character in this
absolutely
movie. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and I think I really, when I was feeling that homesick period, this was something that stuck with me. You know, there's so many incredible memories, but for whatever reason, this weird thought of the Wahoo tree stuck. So I figured I need to write something about this to really kind of solidify it in a way. So. The crickets on that track, I went back, I guess 2 years ago, maybe. And I went to my parents' house and I brought a mic and a tripod, and I probably 10 o'clock or so went out and stood at the base of the Wahoo tree and recorded crickets for about 10, 15 minutes. And then, brought it back to Garmin and we diced it up a bit and grabbed some of the higher spots to use for the track, but I figured we couldn't just use any old crickets. It had to be from the tree. So
that's like extra special. That's so cool.
Yeah, I really wanted to have organ on this one, or I had toyed with the idea of banjo, but I think I'm glad that I left it as simple as it is and plain, and we kept it short just to kind of give it that mysticism to reflect it. And you'll have to listen to it at some later point. And I'm not sure if you've noticed it, but towards the end, there's a part where I think I was recording during one time, or I was playing around with it, and I had some spit in the in my whistle, and I kind of blew at it midway through the tune, and it almost jumped octaves, but it had like kind of a bark, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. So we played around with it. I guess it was when we were recording, actually, but we played around with it, and we're able to make it a little more of a bark in post-processing, and kind of have that as the bark of the Wahoo.